The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
You basically lost two All-Ireland down in one season. It's only 9 months since we lost the last one.
Only Mayo could lose two All-Ireland in one season.
Yeah, that's going to be cool, isn't it?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
We mentioned Mark Lawrenson to pick over the bones of the football this week and look ahead a little bit as well to the weekend. Mark, I believe, is standing by. Good morning to you, Mark.
Morning. All good?
All is good. And thanks a million for jumping on the line this morning. The football is in we're in a good position, Mark, at the end of the week where we've had a big European week. We've had fans back and not every ground full, obviously. We might get into that in a minute. But Anfield, particularly during the week, will you talk to us a bit about that? The fans back, full voice. And it really felt like proper European night with full stadium. It was really back on the agenda for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Anfield, and probably a bit like Old Trafford, is it's just completely different with supporters back. And I know everyone says, well, every ground's going to be like that. But as you will know as well, with some of the games that we've seen with Liverpool over many, many years, European nights under the floodlights, it just gives you that, as a player, it just gives you that kind of extra oomph, for want of a better description. Mm. And obviously, I mean, it was a good game and it's a good win for them. And it's just a massive thing. I mean, you know, we keep going on about the pandemic and stuff, but it's just completely different. When you think about, say, Wednesday night and the atmosphere and the way that Liverpool played, etc., and then think about when we saw all those games in the pandemic when there was nowhere in the stadium, it's that difference is, well, it's gigantic for me, certainly, and it makes, as I say, a big difference for players.
With them going 2-1 down, Mark, and like it could have been actually 3-1 at one point, barring that that offside. Klopp said after the game that he saw the Milan goals coming. We weren't organised defensively. Is that all just out of the equation and fixed once Van Dijk is back in? Is it as simple as that, or is there something a bit more deep-rooted about it?
No, I think it's as simple as that, because I think in his position, I don't know of anybody who's better in the world, which is a statement in itself. So no, it does, and it's like anything. It's, you know, you'd argue that he's probably the player that Liverpool cannot do without. I mean, people would throw a case in for Salah, etc., and quite rightly. But it just makes such a massive difference. He makes a massive difference who plays alongside him. Makes a massive difference for the goalkeeper, all those kind of things. And I mean, percentage-wise, if he doesn't play, you always feel like it's almost like 50% difference. And I think what happens then is that players who come in as well and play and know that someone plays in his position, and he knows that basically as soon as Van Dijk's, you know, fit and available, he's not going to be in the team. So yeah, it's just massive. And I mean, everyone knows the story about having, you know, waiting for him to sign for Liverpool, a bit like with Alisson, the goalkeeper as well. And you can understand what Klopp's saying. Klopp's never going to say, oh yeah, well, you know, without Virgil, we're not the same. I mean, he can't, because it's a negative, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, everybody watching on knows it. And it might be, it'll be interesting to see another former Celtic player lit it up last weekend, Edouard, and they'll come up against Palace this weekend. You presume off the back of his goals that he goes in, and you presume that that Van Dijk starts as well. But like a lot of the debate, Mark, over the last week or so about Trent Alexander-Arnold, I'm sure you followed it, whether he's the best right back in the world or he's not, or if he's a bit detached almost from his defensive duties. I guess that's the main thing that people who are sort of counter to that argument say. You're grimacing even as I say that.
Well, yeah, well, it's also like when Southgate played him in midfield, you know, I think I've been on before and saying it's a completely different mindset for like a fullback, an attacking fullback, to go and play in midfield. Because if you're playing midfield, you know, you're on the half turn a lot of the time, because you're obviously playing directly against an opponent who might, you know, want to run past you all the time, all those kind of things. And it is different. I mean, Klopp basically put Southgate away, didn't he? Sort of saying, well, what are you playing him there for? And I don't know of a better right back in the world. And I think you can always improve defensively. He's not bad. He's just not a world class defender, but he's a world class fullback going forward, and he makes such a difference to that team. And I think it's just the system completely. It's like his mate, his buddy on the left, Robertson. And if you watch Liverpool play, you know, the front three, certainly the wide players in inverted commas, you know, Salah and Mane, they just took in. They just took in. And, you know, these two guys just are allowed to basically, pardon the pun, zoom past them all the time. And once you're in that team and you know this is how the team functions, everybody else basically, so, you know, you're left with your two centre-backs at the back, probably marking one, and you might have a central midfield player in front of them. And everybody piles forward, and his crossing ability is as good as anything I've seen. Would you be old enough to remember Manny Counts?
I might be old enough, I suspect, but I don't. The name doesn't ring a bell.
Right, German international, and he was the first real, I think, outstanding right back who just kept bending all these crosses in with pace, and he, you know, everyone sort of went, "Wow, look at this!" And I think you know, man's up there with him now. He is that good, and of course he's quick, and that's the other thing as well. Even defensively, if you're quick, you can always make a mistake, but you can always recover, which is important.
As important as it is, I suppose, on the ball, we know how good he is on the ball, but is it not so important to get back, to filter back, to do that tough, hard work? Is that what he's lacking?
No, I think he gets back. I think it's just a little bit sort of, it's, look, as a defender, you know, you've got to stop people playing. That's part and parcel of it. But he just enjoys this thing about going forward, and he gives so much to the team that, you know, you always get the sense when he's running back, he's thinking, "Oh, crikey, I've got to go run back now and do that mundane thing of marking somebody." Of marking somebody and maybe like taking the ball off him, which is probably why Robertson is better defensively than Trent, because he actually likes tackling and he's Scottish and he's got a bit of grit there, hasn't he? And that's the way that he is. But I always get the feeling with Trent, it's like, "Oh, I've got to run back all that way. I just want to play down here and make chances and score and all that and all those kind of things." He plays like the kid in the park, you know.
Exactly.
And you're at school and you're the best player in your team and you just want to be everywhere and you want to be involved. But he's just a tough, and you forget how relatively young he is as well, and his experience for a lad of his age is massive.
And I mean, John Giles was on with us last night, and he was basically saying that he's a liability in defence. Now, look, it sounds like you're probably saying, I mean, I don't think you're quite that extreme about it, but people just need to accept that is a frailty in his game and that the trade-off is one worth paying.
Yeah, oh, it absolutely is. And I mean, you know what Klopp's like, and Klopp absolutely hates anything of the fact that, you know, if he thinks, somebody thinks that he's got a weakness in the team. If Klopp had a real problem with him defensively, we'd all know. And, you know, we'd probably say, "Oh, he doesn't get forward as much," which would mean the manager saying to him, "Look, you know, you just sometimes got to sit in a little bit and do your bit defensively." I just think Klopp's one of those with, he just knows he's got an absolutely brilliant player going forward. I get John, and I get what he's saying, but all he's doing, he's playing to his strengths. Why would you play to his weaknesses?
You mentioned Salah a bit earlier on. That contract situation obviously is ongoing. I presume in those conversations, Mark, he's saying, "Listen, I'm the main man here and I don't care what you're paying anybody else, but I am the main man you need to reflect that on the paycheck," and that he needs to flex that. Or what's your sense of how all this gets wrapped up?
Well, I mean, you don't know what's going on inside his head, do you? You don't know whether he's thinking, "I'm going to have one last move." He's had some outstanding moves, as everybody knows, and he's made bundles of money. I mean, I don't think particularly, while it is an issue, money still isn't an issue, if you know what I mean. But he might be just playing it cool, letting his agent deal with it, and all the time he's thinking, "Well, you know what? I want to finish my career in Barcelona or, you know, PSG or wherever." So we're not exactly sure that, you know, the machinations within his head. But you get the impression that he thinks and believes he's the best player that Liverpool have. But maybe everyone else maybe thinks, well, actually, probably the second player at the moment, best player, Van Dijk. So Hey, he's one of those. I mean, if you remember, and you know what the papers are like, especially in England, with, and it was, oh, Henderson's not signed a contract, and they're not doing this, and not doing that, and then the next thing, he's signed. They're not daft, these fellas, you know, who sort this out. So, remains to be seen. I mean, they've cashed in before, you know. I mean, they've cashed in on many occasions. Torres, Suarez, you know, all those kind of, Coutinho, all those kind of players, and while supporters are like, oh, you know, we can't let him go, we can't do this and we can't do that, who knows what Klopp's got up his sleeve. They'll have a plan A, B, C and D, I would have thought, because that's the thing about Michael Edwards at the football club. He's been brilliant in terms of recruitment. So, I don't know, I think it's a case of watch this space, isn't it?
Yeah. That mindset of I'm the best player in the world, all Liverpool fans want, until it comes to a contract negotiation, and then it's like, yeah, listen, well,
absolutely, you just want the crowd. Shut up, get on with it.
Just a small bit of a stock take. Like, we're not much into the season, right? Like, four games of the Premier League, obviously European week under us, and I sort of want, it's a small sample size, admittedly, right? But I wanted to sort of get a sense of your power ranking, and sorry, Rafa, but we're leaving you out of this one. Your power ranking of what we would consider to maybe be the top four strongest team in it, and their managers particularly, Mark. So a power ranking of where you see Solskjaer, Klopp, Pep and Tuchel, in what order you see them, and mark your card one.
Right, so I'll go Solskjaer fourth, and I think that Tuchel is first, and you've probably got, it's a toss-up between Pep and obviously Klopp for second and third. I mean, Chelsea look to me as though they're going to be the best team in terms of not playing particularly well in games, but winning. I think they've just got that. And it's a lot to do, obviously, with the manager and the way he's set them up, etc. City will, you know, destroy teams for fun. I think they've scored 16 goals in three home games so far. And, you know, and Liverpool are up there as well. But, I mean, if you gave me 100 quid to say, who do you think will win the league now, my money would go on Chelsea. But then, of course, Lukaku, if he falls over for 2 or 3 months, it completely changes.
Yeah, the Solskjaer being last obviously will tickle, I'm sure, a lot of United fans watching in. Is that based on the young boys' stuff during the week, or like, what are your?
No, I think that's just on the fact that, you know, these other guys have managed hundreds of games already, and I still think with Ole Gunnar, he's still in a way learning the job. And I think also probably still doesn't know what his best team is. There's always that thing about where does Pogba play, etc. And I know, obviously, we've had the Ronaldo weekend, and he scored midweek as well. So he's obviously going to be a really, really good player for them. I just think there's that Solskjaer's not quite there yet.
Will he ever get there, Mark? It feels like a never-ending conversation about him, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So the argument is this. So he'll say Manchester United have got better every season as he's been the manager. Yeah, absolutely. The only thing is, they spent like hundreds of millions of pounds just to get better. They haven't spent hundreds of million pounds to be the top team. And I think everybody in football looks at them and just thinks, oh, on any given day, they can destroy teams. But they still, even with, you know, Varane and the team, etc., they still look like they've got a little bit of a weakness. And I think, just as we've spoken about Tuchel with Chelsea saying they can play poorly and win against any team, I don't think Manchester United can play poorly and win against any team. That's the difference.
Is that based on Solskjaer?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, listen, we know it's a massive job, Manchester United, and it's a difficult one because everybody says you've got to play the Manchester United way. Well, those days are gone a little bit because football's completely changed. And, you know, when you know, the Charlton Law and Best era, and they were brilliant, but, you know, they'd like win games 5-4 and 4-3. I mean, defensively, they were distinctly average. So, you know, we've got to play in a certain way. Well, you don't have to play in a certain way. You just got to win. And that's, you know, that's why I just look at Tuchel and his team and the way they're set up and think, well, they're the best set team to do so rather than Manchester United. They'll have some results where you think, wow, fabulous. And then, you know, they go somewhere away from home and it's nil-nil and they just look like a complete bunch of strangers.
Yeah. And the superstars playing well. The superstars that have all come in scoring goals helps. The Pep situation, I don't know if you follow this, it's crossed some of the back pages this morning, Mark, about he's under fire from the main supporters group for the comments that he made after the game the other night where there were 15,000 short of capacity, and now this main supporters group are out saying, listen, Pep, you stick to the football and let us look after the other stuff, which I don't know. I mean, I don't think you don't have to stick to the football. He's entitled to have a view on whether the fans should turn up or not, and he's asking to turn up for this weekend. But there's a bit of tension suddenly here now.
Well, a little bit, but he's untouchable, isn't he? So, but I get it because, I mean, I've done many games at City and the atmosphere can be very strange sometimes. It's not, it's almost like, because if you think about City, City always had disasters, didn't they? There's always been a disaster, but they had the fans who just turn up in the thousands and be very vociferous and stuff. I think the problem has been is they've almost become, in terms of supporters, a corporate team. You know, you turn up and watch them and they beat someone 5 or 6-0 and all those kind of things. But you don't get a great sense. You know that feeling about 5 minutes before a game starts and like this noise is kind of boiling up and you're waiting and you think, wow, this is going to be good. You don't get that City. You get it at United, you get it at Liverpool. I think, you know, you get it at Chelsea as well at the moment. It's a little bit corporate, for want of a better description.
And it must be really eating away at him. Like, if he's decided, he knows that when he says that stuff, that it's going to, the impact it's going to have. It must be really eating away at him if he's felt the need to come out and say that after the game.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And, you know, your fans are either, well, they are what they are, aren't they? And there's, what do they get, 50-odd thousand or something? But it's, you know, if a lot of them just kind of sit back and go, you know, oh, go on then, entertain us. That's the way that it is. I mean, you know, you can only speak about your time as a player. I remember at Liverpool, if after half an hour of the game started, we weren't 3-0, they'd be moaning. And, you know, they would not, seriously, they would. They'd be like, and somebody, you misplaced a pass and it's like, oh, Christ almighty, and all that kind of stuff. But then they realised that, you know, the team on occasions, many occasions, would need lifting. And boy, you know, did they lift us. And everyone talks about the cop, but it was all over that ground. And you got that sense of real kind of really passionate supporters. And I know City will have lots of them, but they don't have 50,000 of them. They just seem to have, you know, a relatively smaller number. But that's the way that it is. It's, as I say, they're just a little bit corporate-ish.
Yeah, it does feel that way. Before we let you off, we mentioned Edouard versus Van Dijk, which possibly is the way it ends up tomorrow at 3 o'clock, and Palace have shown that they can swat away the mighty Tottenham, Mark, obviously, in the last week or so. What's going to happen tomorrow?
I've got to take you to task, the mighty Tottenham.
For a reaction, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Well, they look bog standard ordinary last week. Did Kane not have a touch in the opposition penalty area? Wow. I think I read. So I think the thing with Palace, it's definitely going to be a work in progress. I expect Liverpool to beat them and beat them quite comfortably. Edouard, well, the only problem about going to Anfield and playing against Van Dijk is you've got to have the ball. and without the ball, you can run all day and you can knock defenders over and you can be difficult to play against. But if you don't have the ball, you've got no chance of beating anybody.
Yeah. All right. We will keep an eye on it. Mark, thanks a million as always.
Pleasure.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.